you like to know more? Welcome to Almost a Podcast, episode 71, with Paul and Barry and Sherwin.
Hello, listeners.
Hey, guys.
So today's title...
Whispering Sherwin.
What are we going to call it? Like, Resident Evil 2?
Are we allowed to mention that?
Are we allowed to?
You absolutely are. We've announced it to the world, yeah. So no problems there.
Okay.
So, bit of a special thing, because Sherwin's going to talk about the game that isn't even on Kickstarter yet. Is that right?
But it's a game that's been spoiled.
Yes.
A little bit.
So we can't
and it turns out that somebody not too far away actually made the game, or designed the game, or was integral in the production of the game.
Yeah.
Or all of those things.
Sure, I was lead designer, or I am lead designer for Resident Evil 2.
Did you write the theme tune? Did you play the theme tune?
Like Dennis Waterman.
Yeah. part of what we're working on is a time machine that takes us back to 1998 so I can be involved in the production of the set of the sound.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's impressive stuff. Mm-hmm. This is that's going to be our main topic.
Yeah.
A little bit of an off whatever the word is.
Yeah, we're taking advantage of a unique thing we can talk about. Which it might be, hopefully.
Why not?
Something like that.
Internet exclusive.
Yeah.
And we've also gone three mics, which is a new audio challenge.
Yeah.
Which I'm trying to manage with Whispering Sherwin and Shouting Paul.
Outrageous.
Paul's probably louder through Sherwin's mic than Sherwin is through his. So anyway, so what's on our calendar today, Paul? You've got the sheet.
Okay, so intro, which you've
done.
Intro's
done.
Yeah, so what have we been doing? Are you talking first, Paul?
No, it's always you, sir. Is it Paul? Sorry. Oh, we can get sure first, but I think Paul should go first.
What have we been
just try and keep it under half an hour.
It is traditions.
Well, I haven't been at the club, so I haven't played a game since we last recorded. But I have been, what have we doing? I've got quite a bit of painting done with these night shifts I've been on. So I finished off my Skaven extra that I wanted to do. So that's every Skaven Warmaster model painted now, which is lovely, which gives me options and next time I field them. And also I just felt the need to paint a Primus Marine. I just wanted to try one, and so I have done. I've actually painted two because they're quite quick.
Like a proper big Marine.
Yeah, just to test out colour codes. And I'm not very good at applying transfers.
No one is.
Not very good at it. So I'm just looking.
Are you trying to do it with water? Have you got some medium?
I did ask. Well, last time I did this, I used water, and the effect kind of wasn't great. So I got recommended these two souls, these two bottles to use.
Right.
Now hopefully I can do these Marines if I decide to do the whole lot of them, because I'm just painting for enjoyment of it. I'll do them without transfers. I'll do them with either painted on, or I'll do them with like marked pads and stuff. Which, because I found a company that does inserts to all the shoulder pads, which is quite nice.
Okay.
So anyway,
third party.
Third party.
And you've obviously Ultramarine, yeah, Ultra, because you've
got the blue,
the vanilla.
Obviously,
that's
obviously.
You.
And
you rewrote the codex.
I did. and what else? Forgotten. Yeah, I mean, working on the Dungeon Saga scenery as well, just to finish that off. I've got lots of little projects I want to do, because now I'm in this lovely situation where I've got plenty of painted War Master armies, either done by myself or through Simon.
Right.
I don't have to do anything for the next couple of events. I can use new stuff for me that's already painted. Which is a nice position to be in.
Okay, and are you going to talk about your army duties that you're due this week? Might as well get off your chest, come on, Saturday night. Everything's all right.
Well, basically, I still don't know if I'm going to.
So when are you going?
I don't know.
Yeah, but when are you going if you're going?
Oh, the 8th if I'm going.
All right, so that's next Friday.
Yeah, it is, okay, isn't it? Well. It's just out.
I reckon it's up to you whether you go or not, you know? I don't think you'll have any more information in 6 days' time than you have now.
Can you not lose your passport, maybe?
No, it's not a case where it's like I have to, as in, like, I'm beholden to it at all, not at all. But it's like, it's just, It's just frustrating that it's just so... I had no communication from them.
Do they not need to know you're there for logistics?
Well, that's the thing. It's like so when I was asked about like this recently, I said, okay, so this is my situation. I'm waiting to find out whether this transfer, is resolved. And this is me still continuing to wait about it. I know that. I found out from it. So I escalated the concern to my OC. So I knew they had a meeting about it, but they didn't tell me about that meeting. It was only because I was badgering them that I even found out a meeting was happening. And I haven't heard, and that was days ago, so I still haven't heard anything.
The Raven is still in flight, you know. This isn't Game of Thrones. This isn't Game of Thrones where like 10 seconds pass and you've moved the whole unsolid army from the island King's Landing.
So, it's just a rubbish situation to be in. It's like, it wouldn't take much to like just a couple of lines of an email would have been enough. Anyway, what I do have going on in September, if I'm not in Croatia, is I have this interview to be a charge nurse. I don't want to jeopardise that unnecessarily, because that might not be able to be reorganised. There's another miners triage day, which would be important I go to, though that is obviously would come around again, but why should I miss it? And also, Anthony Uglo, the youngest Uglo brother, like his wedding is while I'm away, and I originally said I can't go to this because I'm going to be in Croatia. Well, I could probably still go to that wedding if I I'm not in Croatia. So it's like all these things weigh up, and it's like, and plus there's the main reason is that am I really going to leave Hannah and to manage Hazel for on her own for 16 days if I'm not invested in going away? If you follow, like why I would do it?
Money. The only reason.
That's
it. That is the only
reason. But the thing is I would have another option to do something else in February. And actually, I've booked, because I have all this leave banked up, I've actually booked all of February off work, the whole month. And I still have leave left over. So if I'm continuing to be in the Army Reserve, I could do a different course with Ben, actually. He mentioned it in February. So it's like, it's not as you must get on this plane or, they'll hunt me down or something. It's not that sort of situation. It's just, I'm just frustrated that with it, it's like how, it's rubbish, basically.
There you go, sir. Mm-hmm. It's rubbish. It is. You're right.
No, it sounds very Army.
Sounds very exactly. What do you expect, sir? You were a Sandhurst.
Yeah, I know.
But they teach you how to do this, don't they? They teach you how to be ineffective.
God, I mean, it's the thing is, to me, this isn't easy. It's in because, like, I want. Well, the real shame is, I want to still be in that organisation because the exercise does sound like a good thing, but I mean, I'm not going to go there if I'm not a nurse. I'm not going to let Hannah manage the baby on her own. No, that's not fair.
You don't want to be there.
That's not a reasonable thing to ask. So that's kind of it, really, my situation. Okay, cool. Anyway,
it'll be interesting to see next week what happens, and then we'll
I'd like to know.
I'm sure we will know.
But
in 1 week's time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what's been happening in Barryland? So you're finished, Paul, and
squad. Yeah, it's because I haven't been down the club. I haven't got any games in. I've been at work quite a bit.
Where? Work. So I've been, I'm messing around with Ableton. That's quite good fun. Making jingles and the like. I made a new jingle for KR.
Oui. Mm-hmm.
Did you run it past Daryl, or?
Do I have to run it past Daryl? I thought it was just I could say whatever I like.
He's a very precise man. He might appreciate you running it.
Okay. Well, it was a good job you're here to tell me. So there won't be a jingle this week.
I don't know. To be honest,
if you hear some of the things we've said about KR over the years, it's all good. It's all unscripted.
Yeah.
So to be fair, I don't know. He listens enough to know that he'd notice if there was a jingle.
I mean, at the end of the day, we love him.
Yeah.
By KR. Yeah. Job done. Mm-hmm. I've been putting my toe into Epic.
Yeah, so what is this with it? What is your aim?
I have played it before.
So this is quite funny, Jared. So like...
are you going to talk about the full story?
Yeah. So,
well, you've got to explain that I gave you some stuff up front.
So Shape contacted me and said, oh, Paul, do you want this Epic stuff? I guess he's like, you're not going to play it again. I was like, I looked at it and I was like, I could use the Thunderhawks, because that would mean I could like do quite a bit more with them and I could probably take one or two other bits. And I said to to him, do you mind if I sell on the excess stuff? Yeah, because I've retained a couple of Epic Armies, because I like the game. You know, like in any of its form. I haven't played Armageddon.
A proper game.
But like,
you've played fun with big robots.
Yeah, yeah, but I like what it is. And Shape was like, yeah, of course you can. And he didn't wanted like very little money for it. I was like, I mean, I wanted like Shape, it's worth more than that. Yeah. But I mean, he's not, yeah, he's not bothered. So it's like, okay. So he gives the stuff to Barry, because I haven't been at the club for a couple of weeks, and Muggins over there decides, oh, can I have it instead?
And it's like, no, I didn't. I told him on the night that I was going to try and ambush the deal.
Yeah, it's like, hang on. Like,
you've got many armies, many, many armies. I gave you my Elder army, not that I enjoyed, because I don't like elves. They don't mm-hmm. sit well with me.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. It's just like, hang on. Like,
it's weird because I think he played this net epic, and everything around there must be in threes. So you must need three of this and three of that. And the system I'm playing, everything's in fours.
Oh, there you go.
So it's like, none of the formations work.
It's not even a usable army for you.
Not at the moment, no. But I can pick up bits and bobs.
It's
easier to get one of something than four.
But obviously, you could use my Space Marine stuff as well, couldn't you? But what's your aim behind it, Barry? Is it like for us just to try it out, or is it to like take it anywhere else with it?
Well, I can't do tournaments ever, really. So right. It's just like a different.
So
game.
So just for us to try.
Yeah, I don't like the scale. 40k. There's like this new character, Montarion or something.
Mortarion.
Or whatever his name is. The fluff bunnies are here. So he's apparently some Primarch or other. But he looks like a big, fluffy
fly.
Fairy. Like, what is this?
Have they stuck with the old one where he's the Grim Reaper?
No. They've gone with
some big flying angel thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, he's 85 quid. You've got to be out of your mind. I'm not paying 85 quid for a single figure. I don't care how big he is and how bent his rules are.
Yeah. Wait a second. Is he a nice model?
Not really.
Oh, no, I think he's good. I think he's all right.
No, is he worth £85? Not to you, Barry.
No. Like, GW's pricing is like squads and stuff seem to be okay, but single models are too much. Yeah, he's not worth that much money.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Even with 20% off or 25%, yep. He's just too big too ugly.
It's the classic thing, like, they spell, like, in a Space Marine, like, army, you would have, like, your tactical squad is X money, which is only a little bit more than a single character model, which is plastic as well. So it's like the pricing is more towards, like, oh, that's a HQ choice, so that's priced more.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So your captains and lieutenants are $22.50.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole squad of 10 is like 30.
Yeah, yeah. So like, it doesn't. No, and if you're critical, it's like, well, hang on, how can one be so much worth? Yeah, it's not right. No, but that's how GW does it.
That's it. So everybody's going mad for this Montarion, and he just looks totally out of proportion with the game.
But he is Primarchs were bigger. And
for what reason?
Because they were a bigger thing.
Just what? They were just a bigger thing.
Genetically engineered to be larger,
like 100 times the size of a normal marine or whatever.
No, when they were made, marines didn't exist.
Yeah.
I've heard income.
Yeah.
Marines are made from their Primarchs.
Little tiers. Primarchs tiers or Primarchs.
Yeah. Space Marines. Scale. Space Marines come from Primarch. Yeah. And that's how it works.
Yeah. And, but, you know, he's not out of scale. He's the right scale. And also, like,
he's a demon.
Chaos would, like, make him bigger. And so, as in, like, right, okay, let's, like.
So, and again, if you get these big ass walkers, these titans and stuff, they just look lunacy.
Well, I know, but that's
like that tripod on the table.
Let's go back to that. So, you're playing Epic now. Do you remember how big Mortarion was in Epic compared to
normal?
I've
got no idea, but it would probably look reasonable on a 6x4.
He was about
the size of that beer can.
Yeah,
but that's on a 6x4 at 6mm scale. I can deal with that. At 32mm scale, he's like the size of the room, isn't he?
Okay.
But it doesn't make any sense. So I like the scale. I like small scale games. I think the older I get, I prefer small scale.
I really enjoyed Epic. But it's I just wanted to know like where are we going with this? But you're, I mean,
do you
I,
want me to set a polygraph test?
No. But I haven't played Armageddon. I don't know its rule. I can't teach you its rule set. I haven't played it.
Well, I have.
Okay, well, that's fine, but you'll have to be the other way around for once.
Okay. Well, it's good, mm-hmm. from what I remember.
Yeah.
But I only played a few times, and I played with elves, so I don't play with elves.
Yeah, all right.
Mm-hmm. Right, so we've, what was that? We were talking about Epic. That was good. Game of Thrones, last ever episode. For 18 months.
Yeah, it was a good one, wasn't it? The writing was there for this one.
Yeah, it was certainly. Yeah, it was certainly better than it had been.
Yeah, and it was strong, and like, and it does make you think. Like, was the Night King just waiting, like, for a dragon? That was all planned. That was
maybe he had the chain with him.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
He knew it was
like,
coming.
Yeah, and it's just that's the whole reason why you're like, why haven't they gotten over the wall yet? Or was this
waiting
for a dragon?
6 years.
Yeah, this waiting for a dragon.
Wait,
and it's like this is engineering a situation.
Like, I need the dragon to blow
like,
the wall down.
Like, did he like set out that White Walker with just some people on their own? Like, is that like just him bait them in? Has he foreseen everything? Is he actually Bran?
Don't know.
Yeah. So,
who's Bran the Builder?
Yeah, is that Bran?
Like, I guess so.
So, I really enjoyed that episode, and it had some great scenes in it.
Yep.
So
Littlefinger going. That was one of my favourite scenes.
Did you see the turn? Like, did you like before it aired? Like, as in when they were playing out that scene, like, and she switches the attention to Littlefinger. Had you foreseen that? Or like,
no, only
that was
the people had kind of suggested he was going to go.
But I mean, his story was done. The intrigue's kind of done, isn't it? Like, it's simplifying it down to there's the army of the dead, there's the army of everyone else who's alive, and then there's Cersei who'll backstab them, like, given half a chance.
But the problem is now, because you've got Professor X with his cerebro machine, that nobody can lie anymore. He can just, like, he's like Judge Dredd, judge executioner.
Well, yeah, and that's
like,
why...
him,
and that's,
kill him, yeah, and, him over there,
and that,
kill
and that's
him.
That's why Littlefinger's completely was laid bare, wasn't it? Because he's like... He is all he is lies and like deception, and Bran can like, oh no, you said this then, you said that then.
Oh,
you know, and it was good. It essentially the original story of like, why did this why did the Starks fight the Lannisters in the first place has been put to rest now, because Littlefinger and started all for his power game, and now he's dead, and it leaves the big fight at the end, so it's great. I thought it was really nice.
Good,
yeah.
I certainly enjoyed that scene. Mm-hmm. Joe, you watch it? You a Game of Thrones man?
So no, not especially.
Yeah.
I did see the last episode that you guys are talking about, purely because my girlfriend enjoys them enough.
And she's got dragons in it, so you must have to watch it for Vicky.
Exactly.
Well, she loves the dragons.
I don't have to watch it at all, but because I actually thought I'd spend some time with my girlfriend this week, I thought I'd sit down and actually watch this program with her. I don't really agree with some of the stuff you just said, but yeah, it was alright.
Okay, fair enough.
I felt that the Littlefinger thing was, you sort of said, oh, did you see it coming? You didn't have any time to see it coming. It literally was, I'm going to talk for 4 seconds, and then suddenly now we're all going to turn and look at Littlefinger. There was no real dramatic build in that scene.
Okay, yeah, but I mean, if you've been following the series, like of like his character, like his time was up.
That's fair. I'm sure
it coming.
I can't tell you what happened in other episodes.
Yeah.
I can tell you in that one.
I certainly, for the first time ever, thought that Jamie was going to die. The mountain was going to kill him.
I thought
she'd actually given the signal, but she hadn't.
Yeah, she couldn't.
Maybe.
That's the first time. That's the only person who's ever walked away from Cersei, isn't it, in a sense? It's like even she couldn't get rid of Jamie Lannister.
So it'd be nice to see him leading some army of the good.
Yeah,
because he started off as a bastard first episode, didn't
he? Yeah. Pushed the kid.
The biggest thing about Jaime Lannister is, from someone who read the books years ago, it's you start out thinking he's the biggest dick in all the land, and then I don't know if I could swear. So
yeah, you can do what you want, mate.
Fair enough. So he starts out and he's the biggest cock in the entire land, and then by the time you get to book sort of two, you're already starting to change your mind. By the time you get into book three or four, you really have changed your mind because everything else around him has changed, and you realise, he's a bellend, but he is a constant. This is just who he is. There's no change in who he is. He literally is just Jaime Lannister.
If you can
accept that, then that's what. He's not really, but he's getting there in his own personal honour.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he get in this episode, like he'd given an oath. He believes that he's the bigger threat, the dead, and he'd given an oath that he would go north. And there you go. He's a bit almost in a sense like. Almost like Jon Snow is like his word. He wants to keep to his word, doesn't he? Like
he's basically the noble version of Bronn.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm.
Good old Bronn.
Mm-hmm. Bronn's awesome. Bronn was the best character in the books.
I think the Hound's taking him on at the moment. The Hound and Bronn are definitely my favourite two sweary northerners. They definitely use cunt more than everybody else. They say.
Oh, the Scottish then. Okay.
It just makes me laugh.
The square off of the Hound and the Mountain, that should be good if that goes.
He said that you've always known who's coming for you. Is that him? he reckons he's going to be the one that finishes him.
Yeah, there's going to be a fight between those two.
Basically, it's like Kane and the Undertaker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. It's Kane and the Undertaker, where the Hound's the Undertaker. Yeah, because Kane was a bit bigger.
Okay, excellent. And a bit madder. Mm-hmm. Ronnie, so Game of Thrones was good. If you don't watch it, then I don't know what you're doing listening to this podcast. Go and watch it. Right, Mr. Sherwin, what have you been doing in Sherwinland since we last spoke about 18 months ago?
I went to Gen Con. What's that like?
Oh, that must have been good.
Gen Con's fun. Gen Con is, it's a lot of work. What people don't realise is if you're going there and you're working it, you are doing something in the region of sort of, you know, 12 to 14 hour days every day you're there. Even before the show starts.
Champagne lifestyle.
Even before it starts, because it's set up. I mean, like, flight out there from the UK is a long day. Because obviously you go back in time as you go there. And then the best way of defeating jet lag is to stay up. So you literally have 1.5 days and that's what you have. But then after that, I mean, set up is quite intense. You have very small windows you can do things. And then, the actual working days when you're there, it's a lot of talking.
So, how big is Gen Con?
So, the best comparison, I mean, your listeners will know Salute, I imagine, for the most part. If you can imagine
Salute's Salute, big.
It's probably about 4 times the size of Salute in the main exhibition hall.
That's floor space. Floor space, okay.
Although it's much more condensed in than what Salute is. You've got a lot more stalls. So some of the stands will just be massive compared to what you see at Salute. And some of them, everything's much more condensed in. What's quite nice is it doesn't feel really, it feels much nicer. They run down like a carpet in between the stands and stuff. Like you have banners and things hanging from the ceiling so you can easily identify where each stand is inside all of that. So that sort of thing. And that's the main hall. Outside of that, you've got the tournament hall, which is probably about the size of Salute, which is where events run.
Just
tournaments and sort of casual gaming, that sort of stuff. Upstairs, you've got the areas where you've got like all of the RPG stuff happening, that sort of thing. Like Pathfinder have this tremendous sort of grand ballroom of all these banners hanging from the ceiling like you're in some Lord of the Rings manor, which is pretty cool. You've got a few computer game areas where you've got like, if you guys remember MechWarrior, the game we used to, I think, they've got like big pods you climb into so that way when you're playing the game you feel like you're literally walking around in mech and stuff. So that's pretty cool. And the biggest thing that happens with Gen Con that doesn't happen to conventions over here is for 1 week, basically, geeks take over Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So you go outside and every restaurant you see has got like a poster in the window saying, "We love Gen Con."
Geek special.
A whole bunch of the restaurants will have changed the names of their beers and stuff so they match whatever game they're going with.
Yeah.
Wow. There's like a privateer press bar on the corner, the Ram, which has got like, you'll be able to go in there and have, I don't know, a Haley burger, for example, and stuff like that.
That's great.
There's lots of things.
They're
like
certainly
that.
Good at marketing and taking advantage of opportunity in America.
All of the hotels are booked out. All of the hotels will have like rooms where the people staying in it can just go and play casual games against each other if they come back early and stuff.
Yeah.
The really interesting thing about Gen Con is, although it's so massive, it's not 24 hours, or it is 24 hours. No one really takes advantage of that because the idea is everyone goes out to bars or just goes back to their restaurants or, back to their hotel rooms or whatever, which is really, really weird to my mind because the conventions that we've had over here, like, SmogCon, BonesCon as it is now, that sort of stuff, they tend to be 24-hour affairs where people just go to that place and they won't leave it. They'll just play games.
Yeah, play games.
And that's what they're there for.
Well, I've heard you actually have to pay money to play games at Gen Con.
Some of them do.
The ticket doesn't cover the table fees or something weird.
Yeah, Gen Con have a really weird system of doing that.
So you have to almost pay like by the hour kind of thing to play.
You have to have like some games, like there's sort of two sides of it. Sometimes you have to have like a ticket to go turn up to a scheduled event, thing that's happening, obviously, which you have to buy. The other way of doing it is, and there's not part of your ticket, you actually have to buy that as in addition to.
Oh, okay.
The other thing is you'll have like a sort of generic tickets where you, if you want to play in the sort of casual play area, you still have to present these tickets in order to do it, which is kind of really weird, to be honest. It almost feels like it's a weird sort of dem prevention kind of.
So who's staffing it? Who's
Oh, there's loads of like Gen Con marshals walking around.
But like, where are they? Volunteers or
at that part, I don't know.
It's definitely to control demand. It's why they charge for tables, I guess, because otherwise you'd have to have like virtually a table for every two players, and it would be physically impossible.
Absolutely.
You need thousands.
The really interesting thing about Gen Con as well is that it's rare, it's not completely unknown. A lot of people do go for all 4 days, but the average punter turning up won't turn up for 4 days. That the actual thing is built around the idea that actually it obviously starts Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday is where it runs. So Thursday is the day that everyone will run in to get all of their exclusives, you know, the new thing you'll see at Gen Con, that sort of stuff, and the diehards will turn up on those days. Friday is the quiet day. Now, quiet day at Gen Con is not a quiet day, really, but it is quiet compared to the others, because that's the day that a lot of people will wait until the weekend and turn up on the Saturday.
Yeah.
And then Sunday is the family one, when they do a reduced price ticket for families turning up, if you're bringing the Sprogs with you. And the idea is that a lot of the, you know, hardcore gamers, just they go home early. They don't really want to be there for the last day, because why, you know, if the families are walking around, it's annoying with the kids and stuff. But yeah, it's a very different kind of types of convention you'd have than you have someone like Salute, for example, because it's mostly board games. A lot of it.
Gen Con's board games.
Gen Con is board games.
So is it Asmodee? Were they there? That kind of thing? Fantasy Flight?
Yeah, you'll see all of those people.
No Games Workshop?
No Games Workshop. Wow. They're probably the only auspicious one that you'd think would be there that aren't. But I mean, there's lots of miniature companies there as well, but Gen Con's massive. You know, it incorporates cosplay, it incorporates a whole bunch of artists. You've got their stuff there, kind of, you know, people with the cosplay kind of props and the costumes and stuff. Yeah. You've got board game companies there, you've got miniature game companies there. It's as you can imagine, for the size of it, it's literally got everyone there. It's huge.
Yeah, so I'd love to see it.
I don't sort of subscribe to the whole kind of gamers mecca thing that people turning up, but if you were in the States, there's no reason not to go to it at least once.
Is it because, like, people talk about Salute, and Salute, if I wasn't working, I'd struggle to go because it's just a big bloody a big trade fair. It's like
I'd agree.
It does my nut in.
You've got more to see at Gen Con. I mean, Gen Con is more about going and finding out random things. It's really interesting because if you go to enough shows here, you'll soon see the same tables, demo tables. You'll still soon see the same traders turn up to each time, that sort of stuff. In America, I'm sure that happens as well, but it's different to a European going there because obviously it's all new stuff we've never seen before.
Yeah.
I haven't been there the last 2 years back to back. I can tell you there's quite a few stands I recognise from the previous year, for example. But that doesn't make it any less of a novelty to me, at least.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I had a bit of time to walk around the show, not massive amounts, but you know, if you didn't want to stop and dem everything, then you've got plenty of time to go around it in, like, you know. You could do it much like you did with Salute.
Yeah.
You could do it. It's
you get a goodie bag? Because they used to have a fabled large goodie bag, didn't they?
Historically. Not as a staffer, I would.
No, I mean, like the punters. Oh, so I'd like.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd have like. Yeah, whole box sets in there.
It depends if you're
stuff.
One of the VIGs or not. Though you have
a VIGs.
Very important guest.
Oh, okay.
Those guys get early entry and all sorts of good things.
Do they?
But yeah. But,
one day.
But Gen Con itself, it's a lot of fun to go to. I mean, we.
So somebody who doesn't know, Gen Con's like that, how is that different from, what's Adepticon? How is that different?
So the biggest difference between Adepticon and Gen Con and the other shows like Captain Con or
Adepticon. And just Gen Con, does that stand for generic con? Or is it just Gen Con?
I don't know. It's one of those ones where it's just Gen Con. I think it's General Con, mate.
General
but
Con.
I don't know that myself.
Yeah, okay, so.
But the biggest difference you'll see between Gen Con and a lot of the other shows, Adepticon included, is those shows tend to be tournament or competitive events versus Gen Con, which is definitely like a trade show, like Barrett said.
It's
exactly what that is. Okay. I mean, you've got the tournament bit bolted onto that, but that's more about exhibition games than it is much about anything else.
Yeah, fair enough. Amazing. So you were there. What were you there? What were you doing there, showing?
So I was there doing an awful lot of promo stuff, including demonstrations, interviews, all sorts for the new game which we have coming out.
And this is which and this is
Kickstarter.
Like, somebody might not know who you work for.
Steamforge Games.
Yep.
And that we have coming out maybe this month. I think it should be this month.
As a Kickstarter.
Yep. Resident Evil 2. Which your listeners may remember from way back in the day. That used to
game
play.
By Capcom, wasn't it?
It's just one of those PlayStation 1 shooter games.
Sure. It's one of the games which defined the genre.
I remember
it was one of the best titles on the PlayStation.
I mean, that was my day, 92.
How old were you? 1998 is when
98.
Yeah. It's a great game. It was really scary.
Was the other one the House of the Dead? Was that the other one that was running out at the time?
That was like a rolling shooter.
Yeah, that's right. Shooter.
Resident Evil wasn't a shoot-em-up.
No. It was done.
No, it's like a Tomb Raider
style.
Yeah,
it was a computer game done.
Similar,
By, like, it was. All the shots of the game were like movie-like shots, like film shots.
Yeah, like Tomb Raider, so like where it's all like kind of set pieces.
You're not in Tomb Raider. You were following around Lara Croft with like a camera behind her. Like in Resident Evil, you'd go into this room and the camera would be at an angle. So and it would be fixed camera. So you would interact in that scene, and then when you'd move through the next door, it'd be into a different camera pose for that one. Okay. And you'd get jumped by like monsters, really scary. Like
the idea of Resident Evil is that it's a survival horror game. Mm. Okay. So basically, it's you're put in this situation. In the case of Resident Evil 2,
weren't they? That's who they are.
That's the first one.
Oh, that's the first one.
Yeah, it's cool. You're close to. So yeah. The idea is you play as one or two characters who are basically left in this zombie infested city.
Okay.
Raccoon City.
There you go.
I remember that. Raccoon
and
city.
What you're trying to do is basically just survive and get out. But the problem is you don't have enough ammunition to kill all of the enemies. You don't really have.
Headshots are good, I guess.
Can kill it. You can
with a shotgun.
Headshot's not good enough on its own.
It depends
Jesus,
what weapon you
zombie. Yeah. Okay, fair dinkum.
So you've got that. You kind of you've only got limited amounts of ammunition. You can't get mauled a lot, or else you'll run out of health and die. Obviously.
Yeah.
And you're basically just trying to go through it as best you can, trying to survive, trying to open locked doors and that sort of stuff behind you until eventually you get to the end or get mauled in between.
So how comes as a company, like, so why Resident Evil 2, why not Resident Evil 1, or why that title?
So Resident Evil 2 is generally regarded as one of, if not the strongest release in the entire series. I mean, they're up to Resident Evil 7 now.
Yeah.
And Resident Evil 2 is a game which, exactly as you said, came out and made such a big impact. It's such a such a massive release in the series that it's generally regarded to be one of the few games that's better than the original in terms of updating it. But it's also a game that then held its own against all of the others as time went on, even given its age.
So we're talking about the seminal Resident Evil game.
Yeah, for most people, for the old school games, it would be. I mean, there's sort of a slightly newer generation that might go Resident Evil 4, but to be honest, Resident Evil 2 is certainly the one. And we knew that when we wanted to go back and look at one of the Resident Evils, that was the really obvious starting place.
So is this license to do a board game off a famous computer game, is that encouraged by the success of Dark Souls?
That part I didn't honestly know. Basically, the biggest thing that... So at Steamforge, we have a lot of Resident Evil fans, basically. So when the opportunity came up to make a Resident Evil game, a whole bunch of us really jumped on it and were really excited about the development.
Okay.
Now, you can't not look at Dark Souls when you look at our company, because that's obviously, for your listeners who don't know, we did the Dark Souls Kickstarter. That was huge.
That was really a
Kickstarter record.
Pretty much.
Well, for a board game, I believe it did.
Absolutely did.
It was a few quid as well.
A few quid. Typical Northerner.
A little bit more than Blackgate Miniatures. I'm not going to begrudge.
So, obviously, as soon as you have that, I mean, once you have that kind of Kickstarter or that sort of project, in your back pocket, you do start getting some phone calls from people who are interested in talking to you.
So the one thing opens other doors. Yeah, I get that. Yeah. Okay, so, and interesting. So how did you land the job of what you got with it?
Well, lead designer.
Yeah.
So I'm probably the biggest Resident Evil 2 super fan you can ever meet. It's ridiculous. As soon as we had any kind of inkling that was happening, I kind of badgered the people I work with to let me, work on the development.
Did you still have the game? Did you have to go out and buy one?
I've got 4 copies of that game.
Okay. And a working console to get it on?
I've got 3 working consoles that work it on. So basically, I didn't realise just how bad I was until I, one, spoke to a few people and realised that I kind of scared them away by talking about this game to them. And the second one was until I realised I looked at the copy of the game, so I thought, well, I should probably go back and play this. I've only put in about 500 hours to it. I put in a couple extras to finish it. And I kind of sat there and realised I've got 2 copies for PlayStation 1, 1 copy for GameCube, and then 1 copy for... Where's the last one come from? I can't remember now. I bought one on PC, and it's the fact that I had 2 copies for the PlayStation
because
I bought 1 copy of it and then realised, well, what happened to this one get scratched? So then bought a replacement.
Yeah, totally.
Which makes no sense, but there we are.
That's good. That's Henry Rollins style paranoia.
Yeah, it really is.
You need 2 PlayStations now. You need a reserve.
We've got 3, so it's fine. My girlfriend's a nut about that.
How does the game play? What is this game? How is it?
Yeah, so the whole point of Resident Evil 2, the board game, is that the strongest thing we wanted to do going into it is we wanted people who remembered the old game to play this thing and go, wow, this is just like I remember Resident Evil 2 being. Now, you know, that goes right the way down to a lot of the core concepts we looked at. I mean, some things we can't do, like, you know, the soundtrack, we can't replicate that.
Of course.
We can't replicate the camera angles we talked about, that sort of stuff. And as much fun as we had sort of dropping enemies into a room for a jump scare and screaming, that doesn't really work as a mechanic you can really replicate or ask people to do.
Yeah.
So lots of the things we did in terms of the way your characters move around, in terms of the sort of difficulty level, in terms of the way that things interact with you, is all designed to remind people of how Resident Evil 2 works while still sticking to the core kind of tentpoles of what the game is, which is the survival horror element where you've not got enough ammunition to kill everything and you've got to decide whether you want to run past an enemy or whether you want to kind of try and kill them. It goes past the stuff where like every enemy presents a real challenge to you, so there's no kind of throwaway, oh, this is a zombie, it's easy to kill. You know, you have to think carefully about, you know, how to manage that enemy. So it's definitely quite...
So this has Warhammer Quest levels of difficulty, right?
Well, it happens on a board tiles where you make it up. It's not dissimilarly to, you would remember, Warhammer Quest in terms of that.
It sounds as hard as it. I'm going to get killed on the way to the village afterwards.
Well, no, you're in a town. You're trying to get out of the town.
Well,
you're trying to progress deeper.
You should have found a horse, then you get ahead.
I think there's a zombie horse probably.
We're waiting for the bus at the end to get run over by the bus.
But yeah, so you've got that, and you've kind of so we kept it quite fast paced. We sort of, original discussions were, did we want to have a DM character to control the zombies? Yeah. You know, do we want a zombie turn? And we don't. So the zombies, for example, they react as players move around, so it's kept very, very fast paced. So rather than enemies having their own turn to move around and sort of really arbitrary kind of groan and move towards you kind of things, you know, the things you do will influence what enemies do around you.
So, and when you're playing it, is each game of it, are you playing like an objective, like this different, is like a mission?
Yeah, split us up in scenario play. So you'll have, so for example, the one we did at Gen Con, which was a demo, the object was to get into the Raccoon City Police Department.
Yep.
But to do that, obviously, you had to find a key and somewhere in the streets, and you had two characters who were basically exploring through, trying to find that key and trying to get themselves, you know, there without getting killed, which...
So is it a two-player game then? Is that
two to four.
Two to four.
Okay.
I mean, you could solo it if you wanted to and just play multiple characters on your own. Okay, there's no reason why you wouldn't.
So you've brought in some additional characters, have you?
We're blessed by a lot of playable characters in Resident Evil 2.
There we go.
So, I mean,
so even though the game only had two,
originally had two, but they both had support characters that would run around and do bits for them. So, for example, Leon had a spy character called Ada Wong. And if you haven't played Resident Evil 2, that is a spoiler, but it's also a game from 1998, so I think enough time has passed. But, you know, the spoilers is probably fair now. But you had a character who ended up being a spy called Ada Wong, who was at various different stages of the game you took control of to run around and do things, so on Leon's behalf.
Okay.
And the same again for Claire, who had a character called Sherry, who moved around. So, for example, we're blessed with being able to make those guys into characters, as well as some others as well, to give people a bit of choice as to what their characters can do. Yeah, and that'll change up their roles, that sort of stuff.
Brilliant. So, can you speak about the forthcoming Kickstarter? Is that...
No, I don't think you can.
No, you can't.
I can talk a little bit. It's a Kickstarter that's coming. we've said it's fall.
It's your third Kickstarter from Steamforge, is that right?
Yeah, Guild Ball, then Dark Souls, and then others. Mm-hmm. So, this one will be fall, we've said. However, I know we're hoping to push it through possibly later this month. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see where it goes. That's not me being awkward or speculative. That's genuinely, I'm not quite the right department to answer.
Can you say what kind of stretch goals they might include?
It's all TBD.
It's all TBD. Fair enough.
I've seen a lot of the stuff, what we're doing, and it's going to be pretty cool. Very exciting.
From what I understand of the big boys in Kickstarter, there's a lot of making sure you don't go into somebody else's window.
Of course.
If there's another monster board game coming out, then you can't be in the same window. Otherwise, people can only buy one thing.
Yeah.
Like the Game of Thrones one, that was a big monster, wasn't it, recently? For cool, maybe it was. And there's Bones, was that one?
Reaper
Bones. Jeez, man. Have you seen the size of those Kickstarters?
No.
So they basically just provide you with like a bucket of One Piece miniatures. And like the original pledge level gets you like a bucket of miniatures. And by the end of the stretch goals, you get like four buckets of miniatures for like $100, but you get like bazillions.
Yeah, the more people that back that sort of project, the more stuff you get. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what that's designed around being. It's not dissimilar to the Mantic system, to be honest.
Yeah, Yeah.
But you get a bit less control about what's coming.
Yeah.
And it's a bit more random. But for if you were like doing role playing games or whatever,
yeah, I think that's what it's aimed at. It's really aimed at role play sort of people, because that way you just get a whole bunch of monsters you can use.
So the game that you envisioned originally to the game that you are going
to
be doing.
Back to Resident Evil now.
Back to Resident Evil 2. Did it from initial concept to actual finished product, is that where
we're still tweaking it here and there, obviously, but what was really nice that we had to answer that question, what was really nice at Gen Con is that all the people who played it, because we had quite a lot of demonstrations going on, I made a point of asking everybody, you know, did that feel like Resident Evil 2 at the end of it, and emphatically the answer was yes.
And people are finding it fun.
I had no bad feedback whatsoever at Gen Con. Yeah. I mean, the first guy I actually played was a games developer who kind of sat there, played it, and he was so excited about it. He took to social media and started telling everybody how great it was. Mm. So, yeah, it's been really... The reaction... I was obviously very nervous going into Gen Con about this, but actually having played it at Gen Con with a lot of people, the feedback was tremendous. We've had loads of... Okay. Yeah, and again, social media has exploded with this one.
I think it's sharing. If this is a success, and hopefully it is, this... I mean, your name will be connected to it. This could... You don't know where this might
You'll
be
in Board Game Geek as a designer.
Yeah.
Because that's what I always look when my favourite... That's true. I search my designer quite a lot. Like Richard Borg, I always look through his games.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
It could be Sherwin Matthews or Matthew Sherwin,
whichever your name is.
Just roulette it each day.
Yeah.
You've got a good team now at Steamforge. I mean,
yeah, the team is fantastic. I mean, I don't mean to paint myself as the only person involved in this. I'm really genuinely not. Yeah. In no way, shape, or form am I. Everybody does a very, very good job.
I mean, you've got to prepare that Oscar speech. You know, you got to thank the team.
it's not something I would do.
There must be a games award, like a gamey or something.
Yeah, a gold spiel.
Or the German.
The point is that.
What do they give you? A golden dice? A golden.
I don't know. I don't think we got one for Guild Ball. We did get something.
A golden meeple?
We got something from Crysis a few years back for Guild Ball, but that was a massive trophy made of glass and stuff, which is pretty cool. But that's the sort of thing that, you know, the directors for Steamforge will take care of, not me.
Yeah, of course.
The team at Steamforge is incredible in terms of the actual stuff. I mean, the nicest thing I ever heard from a retailer talking about Steamforge, he basically said that we're a company full of rock stars. Now, I don't know about that, but that's a very nice compliment to be paid. Yeah, because he was basically referring to the fact that every time he ever sort of has any questions, or every time he looks at, you know, our company, everyone is just articulate and drives forward and says, you know, this is what we're going to do, and that's it. And it was really nice at Gen Con, having a whole bunch of people come up to us who we'd never met before, and they're kind of, you know, who I'd never met before anyway, and they're going, I'm a Steamforge fan, I'm going to love, you know, like a GW fan would be, and basically saying, well, I love Guild Ball and I love Dark Souls, so I know I'm going to love this game. And yeah, before they've even rolled a dice in anger, that was really cool. That's interesting
because then you're building up a fan base to the company name, isn't it?
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And then your company name, like, you will hold waiting, won't it? It'll be like, Steamforge made this. They haven't made a bad thing I haven't liked yet. I'm going to like this thing. Yeah,
I see a lot of that on social media for Resident Evil already. Okay. I see quite a few people saying, these are the guys that made Dark Souls. They make really good stuff. We're really interested in this.
Yeah, brilliant.
Oh, something we've talked about in the past, companies that sit on their laurels and don't expand their IP and suddenly they've got nothing.
Yeah, totally.
Well done, Steamforged.
Yeah.
So you've got to come back and talk to us about the Kickstarter when it's running.
Absolutely.
Hopefully.
I mean, depending on when it launches, I'll happily come back and talk to you guys about it. We can discuss how it's going.
Stretch goals. And you'll probably have, I guess, by the time you're running the Kickstarter, you'll have some kind of demo copy of the game kicking around.
I've got the copies that I use. I mean, I'm constantly demoing this thing. I'm constantly playtesting this thing. That's what my life has been for the last 6 months. I'm happy to run you both through a game.
Get on the camera.
Can't do it on camera.
We're going to have to kill us.
We could play it. You both have to sign NDAs. But.
Well, when the Kickstarter is running, surely you're going to be able to play on camera. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, your Kickstarter will have, I imagine, we'll have quick start rules and all sorts of things.
Because you have to generally give people a bit more meat. I mean, on bone.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I didn't back Dark Souls because I never played the computer game, but I will be back in this one because I did play the computer game. Okay. Yeah. And the fact that you wrote it.
Thank you. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah.
See your name on that. Are you going to have it on the front?
It's going to be on the front.
Get on the front, man. Get on the front.
Guys,
go wrestler on it and just go look at the poster and go, where's my face on that poster? I'm behind John Cena. No.
Guys, be realistic, right? It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, okay.
Steamforge make a product. We work as a team. It just because I'm leading
as a company man.
I think I've seen Matt and Rich is named on the front of boxes, but bye.
Well, yeah, but to be fair, they're the directors. They founded.
I think they may have written it. Anyway, I'm not ribbing you, sir. But talking about John Cena, my 7-year-old son wanted a John Cena lunchbox.
Recently.
Yeah, fantastic. To him
good lad, good lad.
Amazing.
You can't see me.
And his little 5-year-old cousin was going, yeah, I want one too. It's like,
brilliant.
And my 11-year-old son and my 12-year-old daughter knew who he was and I didn't. Yep.
He basically
looks like an ultramarine.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, like, you two are into your wrestling.
Sharing less now.
Mid-30s, grown men, supposedly, into wrestling, etc. But for some reason, he's made a crossover into kids' TV. I don't know how or where.
Oh, he's everywhere.
He's on the Today Show.
Well, they don't watch that.
He appears on everything. I think.
Yeah, exactly. He's he must be on Disney
Transformers movie
or Nick Jr. Or something. Yeah. He's infiltrated like the whole.
He's a real celebrity.
Yeah, big time. Like Hulk Hogan levels. Back in the day, where Hulk Hogan was everywhere. Everybody, even my nan knew Hulk Hogan.
I don't know. I don't know if he's that big.
Yeah, give him a bit of time though. He could get there.
He's that big.
He's well on his way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whoever he is.
He really cut Roman Reigns down recently in the latest.
That's terrible. It was awful.
It's just like it was like breaking fourth wall, you know, kind of like, hang on, this is genuine.
If you can imagine,
it's true. It's real.
Well, it's as in
the thing he's talking about. If you can imagine two wrestlers, so there's a wrestler called Roman Reigns who basically is being pushed by the
Roman
company.
Italian, is he?
No, he's
Samoan. So there's it makes no sense. But anyway, he's being pushed by the company to be this massive hero.
The company.
Yeah.
Which side of the company? I thought there was two companies.
No, there's only one.
There's only one. Vince McMahon.
Yeah, Vinny is pushing him to be the biggest character you've ever heard in your entire life, which is funny because
bigger than The Rock?
Yep. Mm-hmm. If you literally,
nobody beats The Rock, man.
No one beats Roman.
Oh no, come on, man.
No,
come on.
He doesn't lose because he's.
Yeah, he might not lose.
And you are consistently told by everybody that he's the best.
The Rock was the best, man. If you know where the Rock is cooking,
Barry, just Barry, yeah, like, you're 10 years out.
Just to accept it for a moment. They even tried to use The Rock to try and get him over to the crowd.
Yeah, and it didn't go well.
And the crowd booed The Rock because he was supporting.
The crowd
hate this guy so much, right? Yeah. Basically, because he's a guy with not much talent who's been told this guy's your hero.
Yeah. Anyway,
the point being,
he's gotten better.
So John Cena gets in the ring with him and then basically just rips into him saying, "You're not very good." Because he's so inept at his job, Roman Reigns, he wasn't able to answer any of the stuff that was being thrown at him. So he kind of just.
He couldn't even remember the script.
Well, no. Because
he went off script.
The thing is, cutting a promo, that's when they speak on the camera, when they speak, is a skill. And Cena has that skill. Now, obviously, he's been around the block a lot. He's been like, and he's done a lot of wrestling, but he is good on the mic. And he laid it into Roman Reigns, who, to be fair, like, that promo, Roman side of it, that's a better promo than he's cut in a lot. Like, he's gotten better. But the thing is, Cena is just was two steps ahead of him. The whole like verbal bout. He even like commented on the fact that Roman was doing better than he normally does during this thing. It's like,
do you think you're being sucked in? Do you think it's all a big ruse and this guy's really, really eloquent? He's like Sherlock Holmes and he's just playing... He's playing Forrest Gump.
He used the term suffering succotash.
Maybe he's doing the Trump, the old... Trump makes the words up, doesn't he?
The thing is, Cena comes from a generation where the promos would be like, okay, so we want you to... bullet point this, bullet point this, bullet point this, and I go and make it your own, and then he'd go out and do it. Now, obviously, Roman's from a generation, I imagine, where they've managed them
everything
too much,
and
they're like, and they got scripts to learn, they're not actors, and thus it struggles.
Apart from The Rock, who obviously,
but he was a wrestler first, wasn't he? So thus they struggle, and Cena just—it's something you couldn't teach. Essentially, it's just like to be comfortable in the eyes of millions of people watching you, thousands live and millions online, and just effortlessly deal with, like the situation in front of you, and be able to be create, imaginative creative. I mean,
to give you a context to this Roman guy, he's walked to the ring before, and the boos have been so loud and they haven't relented. If you can imagine a group of people, like thousands of people booing you for 4 or 5 minutes solid, until eventually he just leaves the ring without saying a single word.
But that's fantastic. It's good for me. Yeah. That's good.
No, I really get that, except they're supposed to like him.
Yeah.
The problem they have with him
I think it's a cunning double bluff by Vince McMahon. I think he's got you eating out of his hands.
More precisely, he's got people not watching his programming.
Oh, well, that's bad news. That's bad news.
Yeah.
He, a long time ago now, he started the XFL, which was like, he tried to do to NFL but what he did to wrestling. It didn't work very well.
No, it lost him an awful lot of money.
And he went straight for prime time. He was going like, Friday night primetime, boom, XFL. Yeah. I lasted about six shows, I think.
Yeah.
Before they realised you actually have to have a product. Yeah. You can't just put tits juggling around and all smack
you
talk.
You don't try and fight the NFL if you're in the States, do you? Let's be honest. No. Why would you do that?
No. Yeah. It's coming, by the way. If you don't know, I'm a Steelers fan. Sherwin.
Oh, the Cleveland Browns.
Cleveland sad case Browns. And Paul, you could probably guess, he knows nothing about it, but wants to support the Patriots, obviously. Because they're the biggest cheaters.
Barry says this. He's upset. He's upset because not only have the Browns stole one of the Steelers players.
No, it's the other way around.
No. We got one of your players today. You need to check your news.
Who did you get?
I need to check my feed to find out.
What, you got a current player from my squad?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I know.
Come on, man.
And we are 4-0 in the playoffs.
in the preseason, on the playoffs.
Yeah.
Basically what happened is the Browns have got two Pro Bowl caliber players.
One of them was constantly injured and didn't really play last season.
Okay, that's true.
So the Pittsburgh Steelers took him.
So they cut him rather than pay him his $11 million or renegotiate. And he joined the Steelers because he wanted to join. And he had more money on the table from three other teams.
He
chose the Steelers.
You're told.
No, he said that. And he chose the Steelers because he wanted to come to a winning team, which is nice. So that was Joe Hayden. He's one of them. And the other one's an offensive lineman called Joe Thomas, I think.
Mm.
Maybe left tackle. Very good player. So now Sherman's looking on his phone to try and mug me off now. The Browns have stolen back one of my Steelers. But
there you go.
I'm going to have to get my glasses on. If you got Sammy Coates, you can have him.
You would say that.
No. He's decent, right? He had two decent games at the beginning of last season. Then he broke all his fingers. And now he's trying to catch like a seal catching a fish. And it was like, he was just banging his club hands together and dropping the ball.
Oh, it's so cruel.
Come on, man.
That sounds remarkably like Joe Hayden for us.
Yeah.
That's not there.
Snapping his broken fingers together.
Joe Hayden, he's like, what, got one interception last season? One, not great.
He's a good player. Yeah, we paid $7 million for him, but apparently you, because we're cunning, and you were on the hook for the first $4 million. We gave it all as a signing bonus and let you pay his salary.
Brownies, it's the NFL.
Only in the NFL,
money just does not matter.
Money does not matter. You're right. Mm-hmm. The only sport in the world where money literally doesn't matter. They put an artificial cap on how much you can spend on players, and it was a meaningless cap.
Yeah,
$250 million doesn't matter. Jump change.
It really doesn't. It's a ridiculous thing.
Jump, I paid 150 quid this year just to watch it streaming. That's like cash money up front. 150 or 140.
That's a lot of money to watch the Steelers lose most games.
No, that's it. What are you going to do? I've got to watch it.
I've got to watch it.
I've got to watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have to pay for your wrestling. It's not free, is it?
The network is $10 a month. Yeah, in America.
So the same as I pay, but I mean, mine was only 4 months where anything happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A bit more than that. So you pay $10 a month.
Yeah, and the rest of it I watch on YouTube.
What about your big events? Are they?
That's why you watch.
I will say the product you get for the reason that I've literally, as Paul was saying, I've just dropped the network is because the product you get from the network is tremendous. You can literally watch any wrestling match you can think of for probably the last almost 30 years.
Yeah, wow. Huge back catalogue.
It's massive back catalogue. You can literally just find
British Bulldogs when they were still a tag team.
Everything.
Dynamite Kid, Davey Boy, all of it. You can even search by the name and it will come up whatever you were looking for if you're not familiar when it happened
or what event it happened at.
Yeah. It's very impressive. And you'll get all the pay-per-views included in that. You'll get all of the live shows. You'll get everything. Even a whole bunch of documentaries they make about the wrestlers outside of that.
Yeah,
and a whole bunch of random other concepts. Yeah, there's loads. The downside to it is the product is so bad now that's why we've dropped it. because we can't justify what it is.
I mean, I only keep up to date with basically the main headlines ones.
So you still got it?
No. So I've got the network. I'll watch the live. The bigger shows.
Yeah, watch a little.
But the main problem with the network is that they can't have the Raw and SmackDown aren't up to date, because I'm guessing it's TV licenses in America that stop them allow. Yeah. So the latest episode of Raw on the network is like a month old. Is six weeks old.
Watch it on Sky. Or
well, no, but let's see. And I don't. Yeah, you'd have to. Yeah, have it be watching it another way. So I just tend to recap the main things on YouTube. So I know about the main stories, but any of the B-list wrestlers who don't make like the highlight show, I don't know anything about anymore because they just not big enough.
It doesn't sound like you're getting a great deal of value out of your subscription.
But I mean, I watch.
If you watch it all on YouTube anyway.
No. You're talking like SummerSlam and like.
Yeah. If you watch a pay per view. Once a month, which there's two a month.
Yeah, there's two a month.
Then you'll instantly get the value back for what you get from the network.
Oh, there's two pay-per-view events a month?
Yeah, because they have their brand split.
Jesus Christ.
There's the exact...
It used to be like 4 a year, didn't it, or something?
Well, they want you... Yeah. The thing is, they want you to have... But want to think, there's four big wrestling, major ones... But
that's all I ever knew about, by the way. It was either they were leading up to that, or they were reviewing that.
It's struggling to make anything... matter as much as WrestleMania, in a sense. That's the difficult thing.
So there's WrestleMania,
SummerSlam,
the Royal Rumble,
Survivor Series.
Survivor Series. That was it.
Yeah.
Nothing else mattered.
Well, yeah. I mean, like they're like the majors. If they were like, you're talking tennis.
They're the big ones, and then you had lots of little ones. The problem that you now have is that there's too many of them, and they don't really carry any.
They called one of them Great Balls of Fire.
Balls of fire?
So the problem they have is that the product is too micromanaged now. Nothing is what it is. I think they've got a real issue in terms of what audience they're aiming it at. Some of the stuff is very, it's obviously designed to work for kids. The rest of it doesn't really fit.
Have they quit with the misogyny bit yet, or is that still?
They're meant to be PG, but the problem is, and the thing is, that hurts them too much. And because in the main event, like of recent SummerSlam, they had a big fatal four way, and it's hard to keep that. Such wrestlers who are like the serious, like hardcore wrestlers, into a PG rating because
what would they be doing?
Well, exactly.
Is no, like, what would they be doing that wasn't PG?
Wouldn't it? But like they can't go. Is in like they can't. It's too. They can't go too far. Like
Well, I don't want to see naked attraction.
So think back to the product when it was last huge and exploded.
Yeah.
You actually had this sense of kind of wrestlers attacking each other like randomly. Someone ends up. Leading everywhere all over the place, kind of hitting each other with weapons, all sorts of stuff like that. Some swearing. Actually, what would happen if two men have a fight?
Yeah.
The natural result of that. Instead, they've kind of completely stripped all of that back. So now it literally is a much more orderly affair. And of course, as a result, the dynamic is missing, and there's no sense of threat anymore to me.
No peril.
Yeah.
No, and obviously, no one is under any illusion that this is perhaps real or anything like that. No one is.
The two big things I would change in wrestling, if I could make any changes, I would have a lot more matches finish without people having to use their finishing moves. Because the match isn't going to finish until they hit the finishing move.
I want the tombstone or whatever it's called. I want the Undertaker to tombstone. And I was like, I ain't got my money's worth, man.
The thing is, like, I can't remember the one-on-one match that finished legitimately. It wasn't interference or something. I can't remember it the last time it finished and it wasn't the one of their wrestlers' finishing moves.
It was the finishing moves that took all that were like really... elaborate. They've got to climb up all the edge up to the corner, and then they've got to wobble around, and the guy's got to stumble in there.
And also, I'd have to make every in a pay-per-view, you have to make every match mean something in some way, and that's difficult. That's hard to write.
Just make more belts. That's hard to write.
I mean,
middleweight belts.
Because you can't have too many belts, because then they mean nothing. But like equally, you've got to like have every match has got to have some meaning behind it. Like if you're not invested in the consequences of the match, it's not going to matter as much to you.
Well, I think the word generally, apart from the big four matches, they were just kind of like they were just like sparring sessions more than anything. Mm. They were just working their way up to the storylines.
Yeah, exactly.
So like each week they were just moving towards the storyline to get ready for whatever the storyline was going to be at whatever the next event was.
Here's the problem. That storyline is completely absent now. So in most of the pay-per-view matches, other than the title ones, and again, the title ones don't feel like they've got that much weight to them, but you have a random match between, I don't know, like Paul versus Barry. No one cares.
I'm Mr. Perfect, mate. I'm Mr. Perfect. He was the dude, that fella.
He was the dude.
But he was the dude. I mean, he was a shit wrestler.
What are you talking about? He was an awesome wrestler.
He was a flabby looking, he wasn't in shape, he had silly hair.
He's just so harsh, Barry.
Yeah. Like, your listeners out there know you to be the bronze Adonis that you are. they are thinking of you right now. Yeah. But
no, I look at when you go right back and you've got like Ric Flair and Randy Savage and all those kind of crazies. They weren't in shape, really. They took a lot of roids.
I think your memory is not really quite accurate there. A lot of those guys were. Ric Flair was always old. Ric Flair started off around 50 years old.
Even back in the days, he looked old.
Yeah, he was 50 at least. Yeah.
Well, even in the 80s, he was 50.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
He always looked like he was old. He always had that scary kind of
leathered
sexual predator. Yeah. He never looked good. But there's
a guy sitting alone at the bar drinking whiskey. That guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm.
Just drink.
Woo!
Right. Anyway.
We're nearly done. We've done an hour.
Do we have anything more for showing?
Coming back.
Yeah, I know he's coming back.
He might play a game on the. Yeah, unless he's not allowed to play on the YouTube video.
I can find out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, now we're going to play after this. We're going to play Dungeon Saga.
Oh, I can happily do bits and pieces.
Yeah. We're going to try and complete the quest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've watched. If you've watched, we played a little bit of Dungeon Saga because it's now like 9:15 on a Saturday night. It's too late to do a War Master.
Mm-hmm.
Video, so we're just going to do a little Dungeon Saga. We've got some other little games we're going to do. What was that game I bought? I've forgotten the name
Hex,
already.
Discwars.
Discwars. Mm-hmm. We're going to play that at some point. Paul's going to play Skaven.
Yeah.
I don't know what Sherwin's bag is from Fantasy. He looks like a.
Be high elves.
I don't know if he could be an elf player. Dark elf. No, he'd be Chaos Dwarf. Look at him. Look at his.
Master Race.
But his hat is so small. You need a preposterously large hat.
Chaos Dwarves is always the way forward.
Chaos Dwarves. Yeah. So we've done an hour. So we're going to record in the week this week.
Okay,
unless Paul goes to Croatia and then we're goosed.
Yeah.
Then I'll see you in 3 weeks, listeners, because Paul's gone.
Yeah.
To earn his money. And
a rolling series of guest presenters while Paul's away.
Just soundbite me.
Right. Next time we will talk about the War Master Rules Committee.
Yep.
We will talk about Blackgate Miniatures update. We've got a what do we call them? A mold is in the oven baking.
Yep.
With Sherwin Shaman in it. We've got the main topic next is list building.
Yeah.
List building 101.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody that likes to know how different mindsets build lists.
Yeah. Like
Paul's. Something of everything. Life is like a box of chocolates. And Barry, power gamer.
Yeah.
Build to extremes.
Yeah, the way it works is that Paul will take something of everything. This is what I've observed going to your events, and if I may...
Something of everything. Oh, feel free, sir.
So you're the...
My skin is thick.
But Barry will only take the most powerful option available to him and nothing else in between.
You have to sacrifice some... flexibility. Like normally I take far fewer characters than Paul. Paul will take four characters and I'll take two happily.
And anybody who's ever met me will know that I'm the min-max kind of guy.
Min-max.
Just a quick little amendment. I just wanted to say shout out to Mr. Alexander, Jay Alexander from LA, who's very kindly sent me and Barry a gaming aid that he'd developed himself, which is a little flankometer.
I didn't know the providence of the thing. I just saw a picture and said, this is from our guy in LA. I've been talking to him a little bit online about it.
Yeah, so...
I've seen how cool it must be to live in LA.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he said sold it to me. It was like, have you seen that film Falling Down?
Mm.
Where Michael Douglas goes mad
and
ends up dying.
Yeah.
He basically sold him as like that.
All right, fantastic.
It's great if you want
to see. We're trying to big him up here, Barry.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right, so I was saying how cool LA sounds.
Yeah,
but apparently it's not.
He's messaging me right now, actually. Anyway, just thanks very much for sending us that product. That was amazingly generous, yeah. And we will be using them in our games. And it measures out 20 centimeters. You know, that's what it's going to do, and it shows you the flanks of when you're in a flank or not of a unit. It's very, well, very nice.
20 centimeters is a very important number
in the game. Exactly.
Has it got 10 centimeters on it as well?
It has,
somewhere?
Yeah, it does.
Job done.
Job done. Yep.
So that's your artillery movement. And that's your 30 centimeters for cavalry.
Yeah, it's like I'm going to move this unit up just outside of 20 or within 20, and there it is. Oh, am I in the flank? I can see.
Boom.
It's yeah. Thanks very much for sending that. It's very appreciated.
Okay. Did you shared some pictures of this already?
I have. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, what's his name again?
Jay Alexander.
Jay Alexander. Thank you very much, Jay. Mm-hmm. Superb. I'll make sure we get some YouTube footage of that in action this week. So, right. So that was Warmaster Podcast, episode 71.
Yep.
With Paul Sherwin and Barry. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can get us the Facebook page as ever, or warmasterpodcast@googlemail.com.
Yep.
Good night. Good night, Sherwin.
Good night.
Good night.
Would you like to know more?